So if you're not producing any content, you're going to be in trouble in 5 years' time because no one's going to know who you are.
It's really not about value. It's about trust. And people will pay more for trust.
The best way to build profile is to do a good job for your client, is to make a phone call, is to get a really good listing, and is to sell a property for a great outcome where the client is extremely happy and they tell people about it.
If I say to my team, who are the five best buyers in Paddington right now? And I expect them to be able to say, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Mr. Jones, Mrs. Stewart, and they know what they've bid on previously, what their budgets are, what's the ideal property that they would buy if they found it.
The biggest mistake salespeople make is they accept face value of what a customer says, in the sense that rather than digging deep and learning more about why they feel the way they feel or what their objection is.
When you're the favorite, they will pay you your fee.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry, sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. We bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. Now, here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, everyone. It's Sam here. Today is a bit of a special episode of the Elevate podcast. We are beginning a two-part journey through some of our most valuable moments across our 425 episode run. This is sort of the end of an era. It is the beginning of a fond farewell to Elevate, but not goodbye, as we'll be announcing something new very soon. Stay with us till the end of part two next week to hear about an exciting new project that brings the Elevate podcast full circle in a new and exciting way. You know, a podcast wasn't always part of our plan at Elite Agent. Back in 2017, we had been producing so much video content due to a little program called Transform, and between that and the magazine, we were drowning in editing work. One of our team members made what turned out to be a brilliant suggestion: why don't you just create a podcast out of it? Audio is much easier to edit than video. Quick, someone think of a name, and just like that, Elevate was born. Our very first episode aired in September 2017, featuring Mark Edwards and myself sitting around a microphone, recapping industry news like Roy and HG, and talking about what we'd learned that week. We had no idea then that this casual conversation would grow into one of Australian real estate's most comprehensive audio resources over the coming years. You know, over our 425 episode journey, Elevate has been fortunate to host some of the biggest names in real estate from Australia and around the world. We've had Netflix stars like Jason Oppenheim from Selling Sunset and Daniel Daggers from Buying London sharing their insights on luxury markets and digital branding. Industry titans like Brian White, chairman of the Ray White Group, have discussed their vision for the future. We've featured international heavyweights Ryan Serhan and Matt Altman alongside Australian innovators like Gavin Rubenstein and Simon Cohen from Lux Listings Sydney. From coaches like Claudio Encina and Josh Fegan to property management pioneers like Hannah Gill, Jodie Stainton and Tara Bradbury, we've covered pretty much every facet of real estate through the voices of those shaping the industry. And every guest has added something unique to our collective understanding of what makes real estate such a dynamic profession. So today, to kick the party off, I've gathered some of my favourite and best insights from industry leaders, including Daniel Daggers, Gavin Rubenstein, Jimmy Mackin, co-author of Exactly What to Say for Real Estate Agents, Steve Shull, a former NFL linebacker and co-author of The Four Feet Agent, and Thomas McGlynn, CEO of Bressick Whitney, and also the current president of REI New South Wales, who's always been around and on hand for us to draw on his wisdom. I've chosen snippets from these guests as they have all offered practical and useful information that you can use right now to elevate your real estate business. Let's dive in first with Mr. Super Prime himself, Daniel Daggers.
Let me put it into perspective. We have built the fourth most influential real estate business in the UK, okay, at marketing and selling homes over £5 million, with the oldest and biggest incumbents that you could ever be up against. Yeah. We did that in 4 years, 4.5 years before Netflix, and we didn't spend any money on paid media or offices. Zero. Wow. All our investment went into social media channels. All our investment went into me at speaking events, me doing podcasts, other people doing podcasts, and influencing and speaking to people, communicating with people globally all the time, every single day. You see, the way we have to look at it as real estate agents is the following, okay? And it's a very simple analogy. The best real estate agents in certain neighborhoods are the ones that walk down the street, and it could be Sally or Peter, okay? And they're going to walk down the high street and everyone's going to know who they are, okay? Everyone's going to know who they are. Oh, that's what's his name, because he does all the big deals here and he's a great guy and I really like him. His kids go to local school, whatever it may be, and they know a lot about that person. And their friends know a lot about that people. And that person is the person in the know, okay? I want to live on the high street, but I also want to live on the digital high street. Because there are more people walking up and down that digital high street than there are that physical high street. And anyone who's not capturing the attention on the digital high street is losing it to me or their competitor. And when they lose that person to their competitor, do you know what happens? Their profit and loss has a big impact. Their business doesn't produce as much profits because they're going to have to give me a portion of their fee. And then they're going to lose stuff like market share, which I don't care about. Okay? I think market share is a fallacy number, and it doesn't work in favor of the client. So if you're not producing any content, you're going to be in trouble in 5 years' time because no one's going to know who you are. And then there's going to be a young man or a young woman, it's going to be Ahmed or Jessica, they're going to be producing content around Turak, and they're going to meet your customer before you are, and then they're going to impact your income. And then you'll realize that actually that was a mistake and I should have invested more time in communicating to my potential client base and people who can introduce me. And it's that simple.
So this seems like a good time to sort of segue into content creation superpower, which is AI or generative AI that's, you know, been part of the real estate conversation now for at least 2 years. How do you see AI impacting the real estate industry?
It's going to impact every industry, but I don't think it's going to impact people the way they think it's going to impact people. Most people that I know want to do business with the best person they can do business with. Okay? If you want to cut your hair, you want to cut, unless you've got a relationship with someone for 20 years or whatever it is, you want a hairdresser who knows what they're doing and they're really good at what they do. Okay? It's the same thing with real estate agents. People want to deal with the best people that they possibly can. The thing is that AI is going to enable Daniel Daggers to do 300% more work. And if Daniel Daggers can do 300% more work, I'm taking that business from other people. So it's not that a robot's going to do it or AI is going to do it. It's just going to utilize the individual that you want to do business with so they become more efficient and better at what they do. And that's a bit scary for people.
So that was Daniel Daggers explaining why being present on the digital high street is just as important as being known in your physical neighbourhood. While Daniel emphasises building your digital footprint, our next guest focuses on turning that profile into a structured business plan. Yes, I am talking about Gavin Rubenstein, founder of the Rubenstein Group and star of Lux Listing Sydney, who has treated his profile as a business asset from day one. Let's hear from Gavin how he approached prospecting and profile, building from the very beginning of his now 18-year career.
What created a really good foundation for me was really teaching myself how to love the prospecting side of the business. I think that was just paramount. And so that gave me an edge when I was prospecting and I wasn't approaching my daily tasks in a mundane or with a mundane energy. I was hyped. I was excited. I knew I needed to do that stuff in order to get to where I wanted to go. So that would have been the hard yards early on that I'm really happy I did. And then second part was I always treated profile like a business plan. I spoke at ARIC and really reverse engineered that concept, spoke about how one of my bad mentors, and I've really learned my best lessons from bad mentors in my experience, but one of my bad mentors early on in my first office said, profile doesn't pay the bills, but it's always paid mine because I've treated it as a business plan. I've set it up on that basis. And if you strategically are mapping towards what you're trying to create, you can really have that in your business plan. So from day one, like literally day one in real estate, my name was on signboards and listings. And so those two moves, really getting across, getting my head around prospecting, and then always treating profile like a business plan, and have been working on that since day one. Day one, which as you say, almost 17 years, has now paid dividends.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, because you've got tens of thousands of social media followers now, not just in part to the TV show, although I'm assuming that some of it has been because of the TV show.
Sure.
What was it like to start with like zero followers? Because we all start with one photo and zero followers. Do you remember what your first photo was, and what was your plan when this thing called Instagram came around?
Yeah, I think it was like a photo of like, I had all these I used to wear these really colorful shirts, and I think I just, and I've always been quite OCD in terms of how I line everything up, present everything, and have everything in neat order. So I had things like crazy colors in this order. And I think that was one of my first posts on Instagram when I had no followers. But it actually doesn't feel like that long ago. Like, how long has Instagram been around, or how long have we been active on Instagram? Maybe 10 years, last decade. We all got to start somewhere. And I actually think it's harder to build a following today because consumer attention is not where it was. And Instagram is not this new thing. I think if anything, there's a decline in Instagram user as opposed to where it was when it started. I know myself personally, I'm not heavily active on it. Like, I use it purely as a business tool for my own profile and to promote the properties that I sell. Outside of that, on a social level, I rarely interact on it unless I'm looking at people who can help motivate me, inspire me, and use it for positive as opposed to just using it because I'm bored and have nothing else going on. But I guess you got to start somewhere, and that's where I started, like everybody else, and just played true to what I was passionate about. I wasn't trying to be anyone. I wasn't trying to emulate anyone. I was trying to build, like I say, a brand. And that tied into my plan of strategic, consistent action around building what a profile was. And it was just one of the many layers in order to make sure that you can build and create a solid profile. Like I've always said, I think in every conversation interview that I've ever had in relation to social media or profile in general, make no mistake, the best way to build profile is to do a good job for your client, is to make a phone call, is to get a really good listing, and is to sell a property for a great outcome where the client is extremely happy and they tell people about it.
So fascinating insights there from Gavin about treating profile like a business plan and how the best way to build your reputation is to deliver exceptional results for clients. Well, having a strong profile is critical. Knowing exactly what to say in those crucial client conversations can make or break your success in real estate. So next up is one of my personal favourite episodes of all 425 from Jimmy Macken, who is the co-author of Exactly What to Say for Real Estate Agents, which contains what he calls magic words designed to help you navigate through tough conversations. Here's Jimmy explaining how to get past surface-level objections and uncover the real issues your clients are facing, including how to deal with that client that won't drop their price but maybe wants you to drop yours. The book contains 30 magic words. So can you define for me what a magic word is?
Yeah, sure. So the short version is that these are words that speak to your subconscious. These are words that speak to that part of your brain where we're trying to actually get someone to make a decision. And what's even more important than the definition of magic words is how to use them. In the sense that if we are having a conversation, one of the biggest mistakes salespeople make is they accept face value of what a customer says. In the sense that rather than digging deep and learning more about why they feel the way they feel or what their objection is, they just simply reply to the objection. And that the problem is that misalignment between the real issue and the underlying cause of why they're saying what they're saying, and maybe the possible remedy to solve that problem, and what they just said are oftentimes two very different things. And let me give you an example of this. If you have a situation, we had a client recently who had a customer who was actually going to relist with another agent. So they were marketing the property for 6 months. The property did not sell, and it was primarily because the market conditions were changing and they had to basically do a price reduction. The property didn't sell. So they sat down to sort of relist with the same agent because the property expired. And when they went to relist the same agent, the couple said to our client, hey, I think we're going to go ahead and enlist with another agent. Now, what would a normal real estate agent say in that scenario? They just spent 6 months working with the agent. The property didn't sell. So I want you to role play with me for a second. If I am the consumer, I said to you, hey, you know what? We're actually going to go ahead and relist with another agent. What would be your response?
My first response is I'm feeling defensive already. So I'm going to say, why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Although deep down, I know why. It's because I haven't done my job.
Sure. So that feeling you have, if you're listening to this podcast, I want you to just imagine for 1 second, you're in a listing appointment or you're meeting with your client. They're assigning to you, hey, you know what? I'm going to relist with somebody else. Whatever the scenario might be. Maybe it's the beginning of the process before they sign. Maybe it's they're going to relist later on. The initial reaction you have, that gut reaction, is exactly what you said. It is defensive. You immediately go into pitch mode. Mm. And so an example would be what? In your case, what would an agent say to maybe try to save the listing? Give me some examples.
Okay, so we could take another look at the price. We could take another look at the marketing. We could take a look at putting the property on different portals. We could, I'd be going into solution mode. Yeah. What can we do? I've got a Facebook ad going out. There's buyers here.
Yep. So you immediately begin to feature dump.
Yeah.
You immediately, and what you realize pretty quickly is those features that you're selling are the same features you sold them on in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're saying to themselves, this feels like it's on rewind. Didn't I hear you already say that you're going to do all these things and they didn't work the first time? So I'll tell you one of the magic words that our client used to actually save the list. And this is the example that really maybe hits home the importance of knowing exactly what to say and how to make it count. She said, after the client had a chance to go through their, hey, we're going to go ahead and relist with another agent. Again, this is a $1.2 million property. She said, okay, obviously at this point, they knew what she did for them. She said, help me understand, what do you think another agent is going to do that I'm not going to do? And then she just shut up. Help me understand, what do you think another agent is going to do that I'm not going to do for you? And they didn't have an answer. Clearly. Because this agent is super talented and it's nothing the agent was doing, meaning the agent was doing all the things they're supposed to be doing. They're marketing the property aggressively. They're promoting it on social media. The problem is not the agent. The problem is the price. Now, she can't just say, I want you to lower the price, don't sell the home. She's got to get them to come to that conclusion on their own that, you know what? Maybe it's not the agent. Maybe it's my stubbornness and my inability or unwillingness to lower the price. If you can get out of that defensive position and stop feature dumping and stop explaining to the consumer all the things you're going to do for them and just ask them a question to have to defend their own position, you then can get to where you want to really go with the conversation, which is a mutual, agreed, understandable sort of position. And that's where this agent was able to use one of the phrases in the book to win a $1.2 million listing back that she otherwise would have lost, because she otherwise would have done what you just said, which is she would have immediately got defensive. Because that's that natural reaction you have to fight. You have to fight. And that's one of the main sort of use cases, if you will, of the magic words.
Actually, very early in the book, it does talk about that defensive, like when someone throws you an objection, which is, I would like to list with you, but your fee is too high or something.
So let's just stop there real quick.
Yep.
Give me that objection one more time.
I'd love to list with you, Jimmy, but you're just too expensive.
What makes you say that?
Yeah.
Like before you ask the question, what makes you say that? And just, and this is where, well, you know what? They don't have an answer. Like based off of what? Based off of, because they might say, what? It's based off of a competitor just came in and offered a lower commission or a lower split or a lower fee. Or I saw an advertisement for a discount broker who was offering it for 1%. I'm not sure if you guys have Redfin in Australia yet, but maybe you will eventually. We have Redfin here. It's a 1% listing fee. So in the US, generally speaking, they charge between 3 and 6% for their listing fee. So you can imagine how difficult it is for an agent to walk into a room and charge 6% commission when Redfin, a national brand, is charging 1%. That's a difficult conversation. That's a 5% swing. On a $300,000 property, that's $15,000.
Yeah.
So the consumer has got to see enough value in what you do to want to be able to justify that fee. So in your case, when you say your commission's too high, the appropriate response is, what makes you say that?
Yeah.
And the delivery matters, because what you're trying to do here is you're not trying to win the argument. You're trying to understand the context behind why they feel the way they feel. And then if they were to say, I saw, in this case, I saw another agent was listening for 3% or 2% or half the commission, you might say something like, what do you know about the difference between a part-time agent or a discount broker and a full-service agent? And then you can begin to position yourself as that expert and that value add in that conversation. So the simple technique of just clarifying their objection or their roadblock with the question is one of the core principles that we coach in the book to help people understand that you shouldn't take people's objections at face value.
I really love that example Jimmy shared about using the phrase, help me understand, to diffuse a situation over potentially like losing a listing or an expired listing. Speaking of client relationships, our next guest was a fairly recent guest, but he takes an even deeper approach into the psychology of client interactions. Steve Shull, a former NFL linebacker turned real estate coach, has worked extensively with Chris Voss, a former FBI hostage negotiator. Steve believes winning or losing a listing actually has less to do with your value proposition and more to do with whether or not the vendor trusts you. Here's Steve explaining his approach to figuring out if you are the favorite or the fool in a listing opportunity and why getting a client to say no several times can actually lead to a yes.
The idea of getting paid a full fee is really, that's what it takes, because this is not an inexpensive business. You have costs. And so I'm very passionate about it. The biggest misconception is why people will pay you a full fee and why they won't. It has nothing, I won't say nothing. However, what most people think and what most people are being trained to do is articulate their value proposition as if people are getting paid because I'm going to provide this value. It's really not about value. It's about trust. And people will pay more for trust. And one of the things from Chris, which was a real game changer, is the idea of the favorite and the fool. The entire real estate industry, at least here in the United States, in my opinion, is built on a false premise. And that false premise is that agents are winning or losing business based on their value proposition, one, and their ability to articulate their value to a potential seller or buyer. Most agents, when they get that phone call, hi, we're thinking about selling our home, we'd love you to come out and talk to us. Most agents jump up and down for joy. Yeah, this is what I want, a listing opportunity. They're going to spend 2 to 3 hours preparing at a minimum for the appointment. Then they're going to drive out to the property. They're going to take a tour of the home, which will take 15 minutes to an hour plus, depending on the size of the home. Then they're going to give either a formal presentation or informal presentation. All told, they're there for about 2 hours. At the end of, you know, and they're talking the whole time, yap, 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 yap. At the end, the potential seller says, wow, you've given us so much to think about. Let us process and we'll get back to you. The agent packs up their stuff. They don't know, did I get it? Did I not get it? For 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, they're on pins and needles waiting to find out, should I follow up? Should I not follow up? And then their phone rings and they see it's that seller and their heart starts beating. Hello, it's Steve. Hi, Steve. It's Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. Wow, you made it really hard on us. However, we've decided to go in a different direction. And that agent's heart drops to the floor. They can barely squeeze out a thank you, goodbye. And they're devastated. And what's interesting about this whole process is when they got that phone call in the beginning, that potential seller already knew who they were going to work with, or they were leaning strongly in a direction. And so getting back to Chris, Chris is a former FBI hostage negotiator. And in that line of work, they created this body, this methodology that he calls tactical empathy. And tactical empathy is the art of influencing others by articulating what they're thinking and feeling without necessarily agreeing, disagreeing, or sympathizing. Bottom line, it's making people feel understood. And so we've condensed this process down to a 15-minute call or Zoom call. And so the agents that I'm coaching now, they're not going out to anyone's living room without a commitment from that potential seller that they're going to work together. They haven't talked price. They haven't talked home preparation, haven't talked marketing. And we've created this simple framework that I can find out, am I the favorite or am I the fool in the game? And so it's not about winning them over with what you're going to do for them. It's simply finding out what's true. Do they want to work with me or not?
How do you know as an agent whether you are the favorite?
So you get this phone call and you say, great, I would love to come out and meet you. However, if you don't think it's a horrible idea, if you're not opposed, I'd like to set up a call or Zoom call. It'll be no more than 15 minutes so I can better find out what's going on. That's your first litmus test. If you're the favorite, they're going to agree to that call. If you're the fool in the game, they're going to give you some pushback because they want to do things on their schedule, not your schedule. So whether they agree to do that call or not, that Zoom call or not, that's your first clue. Now, assuming they say, yeah, no problem, and we can either do it now if they have time or we set up an appointment to do it. The structure to that call is you're going to start out with a quick summary of anything you may have discussed. When we talked last, you mentioned 1, 2, 3, 4. If you don't mind, could you share a little bit more? Again, this is the second filter. And now we're listening. Are they going to open up and be collaborative? Or do they just want information? We call it due diligence. Are you there just to provide information? So they're either going to be talkative or not talkative. That's going to be another clue. From there, we're going to go to, if you don't mind, and you'll hear me do this all the time, we call it a no-oriented question. As salespeople, you've been trained your whole life to get to yes. Yes is the mecca. You're always trying to get a yes. What you don't realize when you're trying to get a yes out of somebody, you're creating resistance. Human beings will die for their autonomy. Everyone wants a choice. As a human being, we love to say no. No makes us feel safe and protected. No makes us feel like we choose what we want to do. And so a big part of this, one of the tools in the tactical empathy toolbox is what we call no-oriented questions. And so, would you be opposed? Would you mind? Would it be a bad idea? Is now a bad time? So it takes a while to retrain your mind how to do this. However, it's incredibly effective. So I'm going to ask them, if you don't mind, if you could write the script for how you get your home sold, what would that look like? So I'm inviting them to tell me what their dream scenario would be. If you could write the script, what would be your ideal scenario? What would be your version of winning the lottery in terms of selling your home? And I want to hear from them, what do they hope, you know, what do they really want? What do they really want? And I'm not trying to talk them out of anything. And once I get their dream price, then I'm going to go, all right, let's go in the other direction. What would be the nightmare scenario? What would be the nightmare scenario? What would be the worst possible outcome? And remember, and this is another important thing, the biggest motivator of human behavior is fear of loss. It's not prospective gain. And again, every salesperson has been trained to pitch value, pitch gain. That's not what motivates people. What motivates people is fear of loss. So I want to find out what the dream is, then I want to find out what the nightmare is, because that's really what's important. They want to avoid the nightmare scenario. And I'm going to ask them, what do you think you need to do to avoid this nightmare scenario? And I want to get them anchored to what that nightmare scenario is. So now that we know your dream price, now that we know what the nightmare is, what are you actually hoping for? And I'm going to say it just that way. Low and slow. Tone and pace are incredible tools for communication. And what I want to find out, are they realistic? They gave me the fantasy. They told me what they don't want to have happen. Now, what are they really hoping for? And the first part of this framework, there's three parts to the framework. Is there a deal here? Is there a deal here with me? And then do I want this deal? In this first part, is there a deal here? I'm trying to figure out, are they realistic or not? So I'm listening to what they're saying to determine, is this person realistic about selling their home? Assuming they are, now I'm going to go to the second part. Is there a deal here with me? And the first thing I'm going to say, and again, this is what's called a mislabel. I'm going to say, would it be wrong to assume that if you could, you'd like to go through this process of selling your home without working with a real estate professional? Your preference would be to do this on your own. Again, that's a mislabel because most people don't want to do it on their own. However, I want them to say, no, we want to work with an agent. I want them to say that. And if they say, no, yeah, we would, you know, rather do it on our own, that's great information also. Then I'm going to say, okay, if you'd rather do it on your own, why am I here? I'm going to get right to why am I here? So I want them to say, no, we do want to work with an agent. Then I'm going to say, all right, what are you looking for from a real estate agent in terms of A, helping you get what you want, and B, more importantly, helping you avoid what you don't want? And now I'm listening. Are they talking about me or are they talking about some other agent? Again, this will be a clue. If I'm the favorite, they're going to be talking about me. If I'm the fool in the game, they're probably talking about an agent, a third person. We want our agent, or we want a agent to do this, an agent. So again, more clues. And then I'm going to get to what Chris brought from the hostage world, which is proof of life. As a hostage negotiator, there's nothing to negotiate if you don't know the hostage is alive. So they always had to get what was called proof of life. And the proof of life question in real estate is, I'm curious, of all the agents you could have reached out to, why me? And now I'm going to stop and listen, because now they're going to tell me their perception of my value. And there's only two ways they can go. They can give me an answer as to why they want to work with me, or they have to make something up because I'm the fool in the game and they haven't gotten their free information yet and they've got to keep me interested. And so it's either a robust response, like, you sold our neighbor's home, we talked to them, they had great things to say about you, they said you absolutely need to work with Steve, we went to your website, we read all your reviews, we love what Sally Smith said about you, we actually went by an open house and saw you, you're great. That's a robust response versus, oh, we got something in the mail, or we were driving through the neighborhood and we saw a sign of yours, or we threw a dart at the dartboard and your name came up. So based on that why me, you're going to get a real answer as to whether you are the favorite or the fool.
I feel like I see what you did there is you had me nodding and then the answers to all of your questions were no, 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 no. Because as you said before, no's an easier thing to say until we get to the last bit where we want a yes, like out of them.
Right. Now, the third part is, so assuming if I'm the fool in the game, let's start there. If I go through this, and again, we're 10, 15 minutes. This is not a long conversation. We haven't really got into any specifics. We're just figuring out, am I the favorite of the fool? And it can be a phone call or Zoom. I prefer Zoom, but if you want to do a call, that's okay. If I think I'm the fool in the game, what I'm going to do there is I want to exit gracefully. I don't want to spend any more time. I don't need to hear myself talk. I don't need to give them free information. I don't do free consulting. In real estate, most agents, at least over here, they're operating on hope, meaning they're going to give everything they have for free, hoping someone will do business with me. We don't do that at all. One of the things Chris said early on, which was a real jaw dropper, the more value you give away for free, the less valuable you become. And that goes against all the wisdom in real estate, again, because agents are always giving everything away for free. So if I think I'm the fool in the game, I want to get out of there and I want to do it gracefully. I don't want to be a jerk about it. And I'm going to say something like, would I be wrong to assume that you're probably interviewing other agents? And you always ask that. Would I be wrong to assume that you're probably interviewing other agents? And again, if you're the fool in the game, they're going to hem and haw. They may say yes. You just put them on the spot. And then I'm going to ask, who are you interviewing? And then they're going to go, well, that's not really relevant. And the more resistance you get to them talking about other agents, that's just confirmation you're the fool in the game. And I'm going to say, why don't we do this? Why don't you meet with the other agents? And if for any reason you're not confident or comfortable that they can help you, then you can reach back out to me and we can reconnect. Because all I want to do is get off the phone or get off the Zoom call right now because I'm the fool in the game. Now, if I think I'm the favorite and we want to move forward, then I want to figure out, do I want this deal? And we're going to start out by saying, before moving forward, there's a couple things that I want to bring up that might be potential sticking points. And they're going to say, what's that? One is my fee. And they're going to say, what's your fee? And I'm going to say, I'm very expensive. And in their mind, they're going to 10%. That's the number they're going to go in their mind. Well, what's your fee? My fee for representing you on the listing side is 3.5%. And when you're the favorite, this goes back to a question you asked earlier. When you're the favorite, they will pay you your fee. When you're the favorite, that's what really determines your commission, not your value. It's being the favorite.
So that was Steve Shull with some truly game-changing perspectives on qualifying listing opportunities and understanding your position with potential clients. His insights on asking why me and using no-oriented questions provide a completely different framework for approaching listing presentations. Now, to round out today's compilation, let's shift our focus to what's working right now in the current market with Thomas McGlynn. Thomas shares specific strategies for making your listing presentations more compelling and explains why nurturing relationships with active buyers is more critical than ever in today's market conditions. What are some things that are working now?
In terms of listing at the moment, Sam, I think that you really need to be compelling. If you're going into a listing presentation and not sounding compelling and just sounding like everyone else, it then comes down to likability, fee, and marketing. And as soon as you go into that, realistically, it's a race to the bottom. And so we really encourage our team to go to an owner and demonstrate to them, this is how we are going to get you more money. Now, at Bressy Whitney, we have a creative approach that we develop, invest in, and make sure we try and be ahead of the game. And we've started to do more and more things with regards to creating editorial articles around particular properties that we're bringing to market and trying to create a story behind these. We also then work really closely with buyers. We feel there's a difference between market knowledge and product knowledge. And market knowledge is you know all the buyers that are currently buying in that particular market. You know what they've bid on previously. And that means that you're able to try and get them to these properties that come on early. And we demonstrate that to our owners. We also have a digital strategy that we feel is different. So these are all things that, again, I really hope that our team go to the listing presentation and a seller says, you know what? That sounds different. No one else has said that to me before. And then you can say to them, well, that means something, doesn't it? And so I think that is important. And I do believe for anyone that might be listening, that is a big thing in 2025 that you really need to be able to articulate to your owners why you. Why you? Why should they use you over someone else? And then why should they use either your business or the business that you work in over other people? If you can't explain that within 5 minutes simply, then it means that you probably don't really understand why you enough.
I 100% agree with all of that. What are some of the other things that you're thinking about upskilling your team on in the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, look, a lot of the time that I think what a lot of real estate agents do, we're quite reactionary with regards to buyer inquiry. And the reason why I'm talking about buyers first rather than when dealing with sellers is that, like what you and I have just talked about, in a booming market, you're always going to be okay. But in a market that we're in right now, your ability to drive buyers and get buyers to inspect certain properties is really critical. So we're really encouraging all of our agents to double down on making sure that they are servicing their buyers in their relevant marketplaces and that they know who the active buyers are right now. So if I say to my team, who are the five best buyers in Paddington right now? And I expect them to be able to say, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Mr. Jones, Mrs. Stewart, and they know what they've bid on previously, what their budgets are, what's the ideal property that they would buy if they found it. Now, the reason why I'm saying that's important is that if we're doing that, it means we're not relying on domain or realestate.com to drive us the traffic. We are getting in front of it early, and then the major portals and any other marketing that we might do sprinkles the magic dust on top for us to create some further competition. So we're not just waiting. The whole adage is, John McGrath used to say, you don't start trying to sell the property the minute it goes live. You start trying to sell the property the minute the ink dries on the agency agreement.
Yep.
That's something that we're really, I know it sounds pretty old school. However, I think that technology is only going to help us be able to nurture buyers in a better way to keep them there active for when we meet sellers.
So that brings us to the end of part one of our Elevate retrospective. We've covered digital branding strategies with Daniel Daggers, profile building with Gavin Rubenstein, communication techniques with Jimmy Macken and Steve Shull, and current market tactics with Thomas McGlynn. Each of these industry leaders, as always on Elevate, offers a unique perspective that when combined creates a powerful toolkit for succeeding in today's real estate landscape. In part two, we'll continue our journey next week through some of the most significant conversations and insights from our Elevate archive. Remember, as I mentioned at the beginning, that we have something exciting to share about the future next week. So join us for part two, where we'll not only share more memorable Elevate moments, but also reveal what's next for us at Elite Agent with our new podcast. So until then, thank you for listening to this special edition of the Elevate podcast. For full episodes featuring all of our guests, visit elevate.eliteagent.com. See you next week.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate from Elite Agent. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links, and shortcuts, visit eliteagentelevate.com.